Hello, everybody. Welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast. We are the web's number one source for information and on the farm system of your 2018 World Series champion Boston Red Sox, from top to bottom, Fort Myers to Pawtucket to Fenway Park to Dodger Stadium and all stops in between. Thank you for the listen. My name is Chris Hatfield. I am the executive editor of SoxProspects.com, and I'm joined by our director of scouting, Mr. Ian Kundal, joining us from his new abode, it looks like. Ian, you're on mute. Great start.
No, do you know what's funny? I knew I was on mute, and my computer like wouldn't let me unmute myself. So yes, I am. I'm going to blame my internet. You know what? New house internet.
All right, fair.
It's bad.
We're off to a rip roaring start.
But yes, I am in the guest room right now. It is quite beautiful, as you can see behind.
Yeah,
I can see beautiful light walls.
I can see.
Yeah, and that's it. I don't have a great background filled with animals and nature and stuff like you. But yeah. So it's good to be here talking about the Boston Red Sox, who are World Series champions, huh?
They are. Did it feel like more, fewer, or more than 5 years since the last one? Because it kind of felt like more to me. Like 2013 probably seemed forever ago.
Probably more, because I kind of 2013 was a weird one for me because I was living in London. So the game started at like 3 o'clock in the morning. It didn't end until like 7 o'clock in the morning. So
oh,
I
weird.
Wasn't really in a good mental state when I was watching them. I was either deliriously tired or just heading back from a night out. So yeah, it was that one slips by the memory pretty easily. So this one was it was fun to watch. They were the best team in the league, and they showed that in the playoffs. And, you know, it was kind of good to see. I mean, a lot got made out of, the faults of the team. And I think people picked them apart almost too much at times because they were looking for something that was going to go wrong. And obviously the bullpen was kind of what got focused on. But at the end of the day, they were by far the best team in baseball, and they showed it.
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting you brought that up. We hadn't been planning to talk about this, but actually, before we get into it, I do have thoughts on that. I just want to shout out our $5 level Patreon supporters. That'd be Sox Signatures, Kirby Miller, Kyle Costigan, Tyler Woodrall, Jeff Traynor, David Nardone, Tim Harding, Ernest Shermer, Bill Stanton, Deb Kendall, Evan Kirkwood, Chris Fox, James O'Hara, Nathan Kenyon, Andrew Wallen, and welcome back, Lendl Martin. Welcome back, man. We were afraid we pissed you off or something. But welcome back. And of course, we want to talk about what you want to hear about. So send your emails to podcast@soxprospects.com. And we'll talk about them here on the show. We want to hear your thoughts, your questions, your concerns. We want to talk about, like I said, what you want to hear about. You know, getting back to the point about the bullpen, Ian, I do think that the concerns about the bullpen, the people who mentioned that they were concerned about the bullpen, were correct. Because the Red Sox fixed that problem by essentially acquiring a setup man for the playoffs, and that they used, you know, the starter 2 days or 3 days down the road as their setup man. I mean, the two relievers in front of Craig Kimbrel, who they trusted the most when the World Series ended, were Joe Kelly, who almost didn't make the postseason roster, and Chris Sale that day, slash whoever the starter that was available to be, what was it called, the Rover, I think they called it that day.
Well, I think Brazier too. Core trusted him, but in late inning, yeah, it was either
seventh.
It was either Price, Porcello, whoever, or Joe
Sale,
Kelly.
Or Uvalde, obviously.
Yeah.
We could devote an entire podcast episode to Nate Uvalde, but yeah, I mean, I think that's why the concerns were well founded, because no one thought they were going to do that. So what it was is the team was clever, credit Cora maybe, credit whoever on the pitching staff thought of it, with coming up with that. I didn't love it because I thought it was extremely risky. I think it'll be interesting to see how entering 2019, how that affects the rotation. Because Cora said, he's like, if you think we get the pitchers started late this year, wait till you see what we do next spring.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you just, okay, yeah.
No, in terms of like getting the relievers going in spring, the starters going in spring training.
Because they're going to rest them all because they've thrown a lot.
They're going to rest them all. It wouldn't surprise me at all if like they start the year throwing two innings a start. I mean, their regular season. Like,
yeah,
they might be a month behind entering the season, which worth it. Completely worth it.
Well, but yeah, that's the kind of, it's the World Series tax. We see it every year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why like they need to, I mean, this will be a down the road podcast, but what they do with the rotation is going to be fascinating because they need to bring, they're going to need to bring bodies in because there's just no one at the minor league level who is a starting pitching option for next year, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, no one at the minor league level, but they do have like 8 major league starting pitchers still between Brian Johnson, Hector Velasquez.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're still going to sign people, but it's, I think what you do at the beginning of the year is you lean on your swing men, like your Velasquez is like your Johnsons, which well, by the way,
will be fresh too, though.
What's that?
Rodriguez too. Cause he's going to be fresh. Cause he's one of the few who didn't throw that much.
Right. Right. And it is kind of interesting to me that Hector Velasquez and Brian Johnson were the two players who will be on that major league tour of Japan next week. Or this week, I guess.
They're getting some innings. I mean, it makes sense because they've been like throwing and like just not in game action for the last month because they were down at Instructs and then they came up here and had just been pitching simulated games against minor leaguers. So
yeah, which is, I mean, it's a hell of a reward for them, right? I mean, it's interesting to me. I mean, when's the last time a team left two guys who were worth more than a win off the postseason roster just because they didn't fit? Like, it's kind of interesting the way we're seeing. I mean, maybe the way to do it ideally is you have your regular season roster construction and your postseason roster construction that's more than like switching out a reliever for a bench guy or something.
Well, it is interesting, but it just reinforced everything we've learned about October baseball, which is you need guys who throw really hard. Mm-hmm. That's what it comes down to. When the weather gets cold, you need guys who throw really hard and have one good secondary pitch for your bullpen. Mm-hmm. And like, that's where Velasquez, Johnson, those guys, they're like crafty pitchability guys with like 45 to 50 pitches. That stuff just doesn't play in October.
No.
And that's, but the thing is, the Red Sox have a bunch of guys coming whose stuff will play in October, in my opinion. So that's kind of exciting. You know, it's probably one of the deeper parts of the system, especially with like Darwin's and Hernandez is just striking the entire world out in the fall league. You know, you've got Travis Lakins, you've got Tanner Houck. You've got Durbin Feltman. You know, they have a bunch of hard throwing guys coming. And that's something that we haven't been able to say in the last few years and why, you know, they've had to go out and, you know, get Ryan Brazier, which, I mean, that's great scouting by them, finding him and turning him into the pitcher that he was. But, you know, Heath Hembree was a transaction. They've had to trade for Tyler Thornburg. They've had to trade for Carson Smith. Like,
yeah, and we'll get into that. We'll have the one thing I haven't given the kind of roadmap for the show, but one of the kind of meat of the show, the main event will be we're going to go through the Red Sox 40-man roster to end the year and how they were, how this team was developed, because, you know, how do we talk about a World Series team when we're a prospect podcast? And really, it just goes to show how a healthy organization combines these things you think about in the major leagues, like free agents and major league scouting, with player development, with amateur scouting, with international scouting, and how all that comes together. So we'll get into that. Really quick, we'll get in kind of the news. Obviously, the Red Sox won the World Series. That's the big news. Since then, you know, obviously the winter leagues are going on right now, and kind of the interesting thing going on there, really the headliner, is not the thing that I realized I was alluding to the entire last podcast and never talked about, which I will mention. But in the Arizona Fall League, the Red Sox withdrew 2 of the 8 guys they sent down there, most notably infielder Michael Chavis, the system's top prospect on our rankings, at least. Apparently, Alex Spear, who we're going to try and get on here, does not agree. And when he did the Baseball America rankings and put Bobby Dalbec number one. But Michael Chavis had to withdraw because of what's been reported as a wrist injury. Ian, is Michael Chavis injury prone at this point?
We're getting there.
Yeah, right?
This is not ideal. And when we have Alex on, I'm going to ask him, I wonder if he knew about the Chavis injury and that kind of influenced his rankings at all. But yeah, we're in it. It's bad. I mean, he's had so many just little injuries over the past, you know, 3, whatever years along with the suspension. And it seems every time he's getting back, he's performing well. And obviously he had a very good end to the year between Portland and Pawtucket. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's going to go to the Fall League. He's going to get a chance to show out in front of, you know, a bunch of scouts. He's going to be facing pretty good competition. You know, there's some really good pitchers there. Guys like Forrest Whitley are there, and he's not going to get a single at bat there. And it's just another, you know, setback. And what is and he's got upside, but it's just at some point you got to stay on the field, and you know, availability or ability to stay on the field is, I don't know if it's a skill, but it's something that is starting to get a little concerning with him. And his body is pretty high maintenance in the sense that he's very muscular. But he's not very physical at the same time. You know, he's only like 5'10". Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's going on really there, but it's not ideal to see, given he needed the at-bats, especially after missing, you know, 80 games to start the year.
Yeah, it's not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. In the meantime, we should mention the other player who got withdrawn was Teddy Stankiewicz, through two innings in his first start, and that's it. I would presume an injury, and because he only lasted two innings, and it wasn't a great start, but it wasn't like he was getting bombed either. He gave up three runs.
Yeah, I would guess so.
So we'll have to, nothing's been reported yet, and it's kind of interesting. I just realized that Josh Taylor has started a game, although that was probably a Johnny Longstaff game.
Yeah, I mean, he started 10 innings. Yeah.
10 innings and 7 appearances. Just to update the guys who are down there, probably the headliner at this point, at least on the pitching side, is Darwinson Hernandez. You already alluded to, Ian. Hernandez has made 6 appearances. He's thrown 9 innings, and he has struck out 18 hitters.
That's absurd.
But that said, it's kind of interesting. His first 3 appearances, he went 2 innings in each, and he struck out 15 batters in the first 6 innings that he was down there.
So the last 3, he's only struck out.
In the last 3 and 3 innings, he struck out 3 batters. Three hitters. He's allowed 3 walks and 2 hits. So still pitching well, but not. Although that doesn't include the Fall Stars game, I just realized. Did he get into that? I think he did, and he had a clean inning. Or did he allow a run?
Yeah, I forgot he was in that. It was him and Dahlbeck were in it, I believe.
Yeah. Fall Stars game, enter. Riveting, riveting radio.
It's a great name, the Fall Stars.
Yeah, I mean, it's an all-star game from the Arizona Fall League, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Let's see. Why can't I find it?
I'll find it. How about you find it?
Do me a favor. Yeah, do me a favor and find it. I'll talk about the other guys. Also in the Arizona Fall League, the headliner for the hitters is Bobby Dahlbeck, now the best remaining position player in the Fall League. And he has had the most Bobby Dahlbeck, basically the most Bobby Dahlbeck Arizona Fall League ever. For the league is hitting .208, .333, .415. In 14 games, he has 5 doubles, 2 home runs, and 25 strikeouts in 53 at-bats. And basically, he oscillates between being red hot and striking out at a prodigious clip. I had splits, but they don't have a game log for more than 10 games, unfortunately, down there.
He was 2 for 2 in the All-Star game. I didn't find the box score.
Yeah, but apparently the 2 hits was like, it was like a bloop single and a ground ball or something.
Okay, yeah. And Darwinson threw a third of an inning with a strikeout and a hit, and he gave up a hit. So he got in late in the game and only got to pitch, you know, a little bit.
Okay, 2 hitters.
Okay. Dahlbeck splits, by the way. Lefties are, I mean, a small sample size song, but he's 1 for 12 against lefties and 10 for 41 against righties.
Interesting. With both of his home runs against righties.
Correct. He's .244, .354, .488 against righties.
That's got to be a small sample size thing.
Well, obviously, but yeah.
I mean, it's 12 at bats against lefties, and the lefties were probably like murderous.
Decent. But I mean, it just further reinforces kind of what we saw during the season, and it's all going to come down to the strikeouts for him. And I mean, we'll probably get into it now. Future, that was the guy he had at number one, and you can make the case for it. I mean, the upside is there. If he makes enough contact at .235, or you could guarantee me he would hit .240, I would put him as the number one prospect, but I just am not sure he can do that.
Right.
Like, right. And we're not talking about like even, you know, .260 or .270. We're talking like .240, I'm not, is a sure thing. And yeah, that's scary. I mean, and it's interesting to me kind of framing him in conjunction or kind of what was talked about with the Red Sox coaching staff. You know, guys like Cora talked about how, well, they're relentless hitters. We put the ball in play, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I was thinking when I heard that, I was like, Bobby Dahlbeck does not fit that strategy at all. So yeah, just something I was just thought was interesting that to look forward to. And maybe that, you know, he'd be more of a trade chip because some other teams might not care as much about the strikeouts, since it's pretty clear the Red Sox, at least the major league staff, does.
Other guys in the Arizona Fall League, Josh Ockamy has struggled a little bit. He's hitting 205, 265, 227. So I'm kind of understating the struggles. In 12 games, he's got 15 strikeouts and 44 at bats, only one double, no home runs in his nine hits. Against lefties, he's 0 for 11 with six strikeouts.
Not surprising.
No. So he's struggled a lot. Esteban Quiroz it's interesting. In 10 games, he's hitting 250, 444, 500. But basically almost all of his production has come. Well, he had one really good game to start the league, had four bad ones, and then he's been hitting really well since. So he's got two doubles and two home runs. Probably just readjusting. I mean, he's still got some rust, but it's kind of funny. He went 2 for 3 in his first game with a home run, and in his next four games, he went 1 for 17 with 8 strikeouts. And then since then, he's actually hitting well again. So small sample size.
On base machine, 11 yes. walks in 43 plate appearances.
Mm-hmm. Finally, on the other side of the ball, Mike Schwarren pitching out of the bullpen in 6 appearances, 7 2/3. He's got 10 strikeouts. He's allowed 2 runs on 8 hits and a walk. Really kind of, Ian, under the radar compared to Darwinson, but not bad relief numbers from Schwarren.
No, I mean, I think that might be where he ends up. So it's good to see that he's kind of having some success against decent competition out of the bullpen.
And then in 7 appearances in 10 innings, Josh Taylor, 13 strikeouts, but he's allowed 13 hits. He's been pretty hittable in his 7 outings. He's allowed multiple hits in 5 of them. He's allowed runs in 3 of them. That said, he's not walking anybody, which is good. Only 2 walks, and he's striking guys out as he always does. But still, he's proven to be kind of hittable, which is kind of, I don't know, it's weird to me. But
I mean, yeah, it's just command. He throws strikes, but they're not always quality strikes. And when you're in the middle of the zone, that's an issue.
Command versus control, which is something exactly. We talk about on here a lot.
Yeah, but he's an interesting guy we'll get into probably later in the offseason because he's one of the few Rule 5 decisions they have because I think he gets picked pretty – There's a very good chance he gets picked if he doesn't get protected. So we'll see.
Right. Elsewhere in the winter leagues, just real quick, there really isn't a whole lot to talk about. At least as of last night when I updated our page, probably the only prospect of some note was Emmanuel De Jesus, the left-hander pitching in Venezuela. He's throwing out of the bullpen in 8 1/3 innings. He's got 7 strikeouts to no walks, 1.08 ERA, 1.20 WHIP. Other than that, it's kind of a cast of characters throughout the Caribbean, at least. One thing I did want to mention in the Venezuelan development program, two things, I guess, that I wanted to mention. One, it was kind of interesting because they played 3 games, and then suddenly their games weren't getting updated. It was really strange. So I went ahead and asked, hey, what's the deal with the Venezuelan development program, the Liga Paralela? Turns out the Red Sox flew all of the players and coaches up to Boston for games 1 and 2 of the World Series, calling off that week of games for the team. So that was actually pretty neat.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was a pretty nice gesture on their part. I'm sure there are plenty of U.S. minor leaguers wondering where their plane ticket and accommodations to Boston were. But that said, no, a very nice gesture by the team for those guys who are down there still getting after it. The other thing that I did want to mention is something that I alluded to and never mentioned on the last podcast.
Your boy.
The return of Christopher Acosta.
Wild ride with him.
as for those of you who are unfamiliar, Christopher Acosta was signed out of the Dominican Republic in 2014 as a July 2nd signee. For $1.5 million.
He was thought of as a top, I think, 10 or 5 or 10 overall prospect in that international class, too.
I think it was weird. I think that was a weird year because that was the same year as both Anderson Espinoza and I think Yoan Moncada, right?
Yeah.
So I think the MLB and Baseball America lists didn't agree on which one of the two was the better pitching prospect. I think MLB had Acosta as the best pitching prospect in that class, whereas Baseball America had him somewhere like 12 or something. So it was interesting. Anyway, Acosta goes, has a kind of nondescript debut in 2015 in the Dominican. Clearly outshined by Espinoza. Had an ankle injury that cost him a bunch of innings. He only threw 33 and two-thirds innings with mediocre numbers. But he pitched a lot better after he came back from the injury. We see him in spring training in 2016, Ian. I remember Chaz Fiorino in particular really loved him.
Yeah, no, he was good. He looked good in there.
And we ranked him 20th in the system. We bumped him into the top 20.
Yeah, I mean, he was a 17 or 18 year old pitcher who would or 18 year old pitcher.
Yeah.
With, you know, a lot of projection and three feel for three pitches. Like, that's an interesting guy.
Yeah, and so we're kind of high on him. We're like, hey, don't sleep on this guy. And then something happened, I think just as the Dominican Summer League was about to start, where he gets sent home. Or he goes home. We don't really know what happened. It's never been reported. We've never been able to find out what happened. And he just hasn't played since. If you follow his social media, you had reason to believe he was never coming back, basically. But all of a sudden, this offseason, we learned and we reported and broke the news that he was going to pitch in the Liga Paralela. And he made his debut recently in three innings. He didn't allow a run. One strikeout, one walk, one hit in three innings. Christopher Acosta's a thing again. That said, you know, at this point, he's going to be 21 next season. He has never pitched stateside. It's going to be an uphill battle for him. I still would not expect much. But, hey, when you can get that kind of arm back, if he's dedicated to it again, why not, right?
Exactly. But until it's one of those, you know, it's interesting, but until I see him stateside, it's like I need to see it to believe it still.
Right, right. And we'll see. I mean, we don't know anything about his pitching in the Liga Paralela being anything more than him pitching in that league. They have had guys play for that team who they've cut before, and they just happen to be from Venezuela. So they're like, hey, you want to come play for our affiliate in the Liga Paralela? And they do. I remember Carlos Fernandez Oliva. Ian was a guy who came back like 2 years after they caught him and was playing for that team. So it doesn't necessarily mean it.
God, that's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Right, right. So, yeah. But I think that kind of covers most of the stuff. I guess other news that we should really quickly mention, transaction-wise, the free agents are now free agents. You can go to SoxProspects.com/transactions to see the kind of comings and goings. But Ian, let's see, guys who are outrighted from the 40-man roster probably deserve a mention. The Red Sox outrighted Tony Renda, Justin Haley, and Carson Smith off of the Major League roster. Carson Smith immediately elected free agency. Renda and Haley couldn't elect free agency then, but they became minor league free agents the next day, so it was the same difference. So all three of those guys are gone, as well as the players who we knew were going to be minor league free agents. That includes, of some note, I guess, Aniri Tavares and Yancori Pimentel, who are the two kind of homegrown guys. And I guess Mike Miller was the other guy. Oh, and Haley, I guess, because I mentioned him.
I mean, it's a lot of like orgy minor leaguers. And Dan Baller would be in that too. But yeah, it's just a lot of orgy minor leaguers.
No one who was ranked, right?
No. Yeah. Or Haley might have been, but I don't think so.
Oh, no, he was.
Was he? He was in like the 50s?
Yeah, Justin Haley we had ranked at number 57. So he's now a minor league free agent. I think that honestly kind of speaks to kind of how thin things get back there. When you rank 60 out, man, you're going to get guys who become minor league free agents.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because the thing with him, it's like there was obviously no ceiling, but there was like a floor. You knew what he is, and that far down is such a crapshoot.
And you know, they cleared those roster spots. I mean, I think in part that's to sign free agents. We're hearing that the free agent market's going to move a lot quicker this year. I don't know if you're seeing the same things, Ian, online. But all the reports I'm seeing seem to be, who knows, it's probably one report and everyone's piggybacking off of it. But things are going to move a lot quicker this year. So the Red Sox probably giving those guys a chance to, you know, go see what's out there.
Yeah, I mean, because they have like six open spots right now, I want to say.
Yeah, there's 34 players on the 40-man roster. And there are more guys that they could cut loose, honestly.
Yes.
I mean, on the 40-man roster still, you have William Cuevas, you have Marcus Walden, Chandler Shepherd is a guy I could see them DFAing, Austin Maddox. We talked about this on the last episode. So yeah. There's plenty more guys who they could cut loose in theory.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that we were supposed to talk about, Ian, from a newsy standpoint? Probably just get right into the...
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Okay. One thing that I wanted to kind of, like I mentioned, really kind of looking back at a World Series champion, how did this roster get built? And you know, before we started recording, I went through everyone who was on the 40-man at the or 60-day DL at the time the season ended. And Ian, I have a question for you. How many players who were either on the 40-man roster or were minor league free agents at the end of the year, or sorry, no, were either on the 40-man roster or 60-day DL at the end of the year, were acquired by the Red Sox as major league free agents?
Six?
Four.
Four. I knew it wasn't a lot.
Rick Porcello, yeah. David Price, Mitch Moreland, and J.D. Martinez.
No, Porcello was traded for, though.
Oh, God, he was.
Yeah.
Never mind. They re-signed him as I was thinking of the contract that they gave him. You're right. I'm sorry.
It's not a lot.
So it's three.
Yeah.
It's three. Okay, now where does Porcello fit right here? Okay.
Well, I guess how do you count like Ryan Brazier though?
Minor league free agents. That's why I said major league free agents.
Yeah. So that's more it's Moreland, Price, and JD. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. There were five guys who were minor league free agents.
Okay, yeah.
One of them only sorta. So Marcus Walden, Ryan Brazier, Brandon Phillips, and Tony Renda were minor league free agents. William Cuevas was kinda. I mean, he was a minor league free agent, but he had spent 1 year in Detroit after being a homegrown Red Sox guy. So you could arguably call him homegrown, and I wouldn't really debate the point too hard with you. But yeah, that's not a lot of free agents. I think that they've done a very good job. As much as, you know, basically there were more guys who were acquired or who were homegrown versus who were acquired in trades. A lot of guys acquired by trade. There were 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 guys acquired by trade as opposed to 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 19 homegrown plus another 8 who were free agents of some kind. So... you know, I guess really, you know, there's not much you can say about the free agents, although what I would say is two things. For the major league free agency, Ian, you look at in particular the big money guys in Price and J.D. Martinez. You can go get those guys because of how many homegrown players are in the lineup, right? That's kind of the way that, again, developing a complete organization allows you to go get those guys because when you're paying guys, you know, major league minimums, pre-arb salaries, early arb salaries, you have the money left over. You know, when your best player is making $10 million in his first year of arbitration, that allows you to go sign JD Martinez.
Exactly.
For the minor league free agents, I think that that's good scouting. You know, it's going like you already mentioned with Brazier. Brandon Phillips is his own animal, but
He's different.
You know, going and plucking Tony Renda, who I love, is going to get a World Series ring from one pinch running appearance in which he scored the game winning run.
Fair.
But, you know, one pinch running appearance that easily could have been done by like Swihart or someone who knows.
So does someone like Dan Butler get a World Series ring, even though he was outrighted during the season?
He was on the 40? Yeah, I think so.
But he was outrighted.
Did he play a game? Yeah, he definitely gets a ring, which is good. I like seeing Dan Butler get a ring.
Yeah, honestly. Exactly. That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of a way you look at those guys. Walden, a guy who kind of made the roster at the beginning of the year by surprise, a guy who had been a minor league free agent the previous season, who they brought back. Who had spent the year as kind of the swing man at Pawtucket. So, all kind of interesting.
Well, and I think it's interesting, too. It kind of like, you know, the narrative sometimes is, especially given the Red Sox payroll, that they, quote unquote, bought this championship or some accusations of that. And it's like they signed three guys to free agents. Yes, you know, two of them were really expensive guys, but it's only three players. So the majority of the team is homegrown or was acquired via trade of homegrown players. And, you know, that's kind of the recipe for building a sustainable team.
Well, not all of them. It's kind of interesting because not all of them were traded by for homegrown guys.
Or they were traded for some
mostly.
People.
Yeah. For guys, you know, you could kind of do the trade tree back, which is a thing, a project I'd like to do. But
Mark Melanson.
Well, right, exactly.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, actually. But I guess, should we start with the homegrown guys? Just because those are a little easier to go through. I guess what I was thinking is we could just go really quickly through each of them and kind of their path to the major leagues, because we don't really follow up on these major league guys that often sometimes.
Makes sense.
The longest tenured Red Sox, obviously, is Dustin Pedroia. Drafted in the second round in 2004, the earliest draft pick the team had that year because they didn't have a first-round draft pick in 2004 because they had forfeited that pick for signing Keith Foulke, actually, as a major league free agent. So Dustin Pedroia, kind of interesting point thought, Ian, was the second-round pick that year. 10th-round pick that year out of the University of South Carolina. Steve Pierce.
Did they take him?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't sign him, but they took him out of South Carolina as a junior.
Pierce, I did not know that.
Yeah, and I believe they were talking about this during the World Series. He went back to school for his senior year because he wanted to try and win a college World Series.
That's wild.
Yeah.
What a roundabout career.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, the full circle that he comes back to the organization. That, I mean, he got drafted out of high school as well, but the Red Sox drafted him and didn't sign him in 2004, which is kind of wild, like you said. So Pedroia is the longest tenured Red Sox, obviously. Second longest tenured Red Sox, if you count all years in the org, not just the major leagues, is Christian Vasquez. Vasquez was drafted in the 9th round in 2008 out of Puerto Rico. Kind of a guy who bucked a trend for us. We always used to say that spending 2 years in the Gulf Coast League was a death sentence, essentially. But Vasquez spent 2 years in the Gulf Coast League and made it to the majors, and he's got a nice little multi-year contract. Other players drafted that year, Ian. Casey Kelly, Brian Price, Derek Gibson, Stephen Fife, Kyle Weiland, Peter Hissey, Ryan Westmoreland, Ryan LaVarnway, Tim Fedorovich, and Mike Lee, all drafted before Christian Vasquez. So kind of interesting group of guys that to see Vasquez not only outlasting all of those guys, I don't think any of the other ones are in the majors.
I mean, saw Kelly, Derek Gibson this year, actually.
Oh, in AAA?
Yeah.
I mean, Kelly pitched in the majors this year. Not Westmoreland. LaVarnway and I think Fedorovich both played in the majors this year, but they're both up and down guys at this point.
Alex Meyer did. Dee Sclafani did. But they're like, wait, Travis Shaw was drafted in that year, ironically.
Well, guys they didn't sign, yeah. So yeah. They drafted and didn't sign Alex Meyer as a high schooler.
Actually,
did Meyer play very much?
I think he played a little bit for the Angels.
Because he was hurt. He was hurt.
Yan Gomes was a starting catcher for the Indians.
Yeah, that's right.
They took him in the 39th round.
Out of Tennessee. He must have been a draft eligible sophomore.
I think he was. They took Grandal the year before, ironically, speaking of catchers. But
Hunter Cervenka did sign, and I think he might have gotten a cup this year.
Last year, which is one of the wildest things I've ever. Yeah, anyway. But no, I mean, it's just. Yeah, I mean, that's a heck of a pick in the 9th round. And as you said, it's $80,000. You know, you get a guy who, what did he sign, like a 5-year, $18 million contract or whatever he did. Like, that's been a really good pick. And it's interesting. I mean, they have 3 catchers for next year. So I don't know if they want to do the same thing again. So
for now,
it's going to be interesting what happens in the offseason, too, with regards to that position.
I look forward to my rant next year if they do that again. next up, we should probably take, Ian, as a whole, the 2011 draft, because next up for homegrown guys in terms of major league tenure is Jackie Bradley. So let's kind of look at from the 2011 draft roster. The Red Sox drafted in the first round Matt Barnes at number 19.
He was pretty good, too. When we were talking about the bullpen guys, he had a pretty good playoff.
He did.
I thought.
That's true. Very good, very good playoff. They drafted him 19th. He was a top 15 prospect in the draft by both Baseball America and Perfect Game. at number 26 overall in the first round, the Red Sox drafted Blake Swihart. Obviously, we've done that rant. I guess he pinch hit twice in the World Series or in the playoffs. I mean, he barely played, which is its
own. He caught a little bit. He caught.
He did catch. Game, that's right? True. Yeah, he caught in the 18 inning game. That's right.
Yeah.
Because they had to play Velasquez at first, right?
Vasquez,
not Velasquez. Sorry. Yeah, they were playing Vasquez at first. Yeah, that game was. You want to say wild? That 18 inning game was wild AF.
I stayed up for the whole thing.
Did you? Yeah, I did too.
I told you. I remember I called that they were going to score. I was like, the Red Sox need to score this inning because they're getting in trouble or something. Mm. You could feel it coming.
Yeah.
Because they weren't going to score.
Yeah. Right. And then with the 40th pick in the supplemental first round with their fourth pick of the draft, the Red Sox take Jackie Bradley, their starting center fielder, who key contributor, obviously.
And didn't play in the last two games except as a defensive replacement because the NL is so stupid.
Yeah, they really need to have the DH. Yeah. And then, of course, in the fifth round, famously, the Red Sox took a shortstop out of a Tennessee high school by the name of Marcus Spetz, who signed for $750,000, and the rest is history.
Well, there's another player in this draft who's relevant to the World Series run also.
Well, all right. Do we want to get to that now or later? Because
we can do it later.
Yeah.
We'll tease it out.
Yeah, because there's guys that they traded. Although, who do they trade? There might be two.
Well, they traded the first guy guy they got this
Ramirez
year.
Ramirez was claimed off waivers, I thought they traded him. So they traded two guys for players who were on the 40.
Yeah, except one of them didn't pitch in the playoffs.
No, he did not. And
unsurprisingly.
No, he did not. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anybody else interesting they drafted that year.
Gossett's a big leaguer for Oakland.
Daniel Gossett, lefty out of they drafted him out of South Carolina high school. He went to
Clemson. He's a righty, though.
But, is he a righty?
Yeah.
We should fix that.
Mac Williamson, I think he played for the Giants this year, I want to say.
Did he get up? Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's with the – I know he's with the Giants. But
yeah, he played he got 94 at-bats this year, 105 PAs in 28 games this year.
Yeah.
But that's about it. It's funny, actually. Everything happened in the first 10 rounds, and then after that, it was a lot of nothing.
And by everything happened, that includes guys in jail in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything.
And banished to Mexico because of multiple drug violations. Absolute craziness. Yeah, 2011 was an interesting draft. Like, I really do hope to write that, if I ever am able, that oral history someday. recently, I think it was one of the beat writers wrote a very good article about that draft, about how, like, the Red Sox would have drafted Jackie Bradley at 19, but he kept falling, and they, like, knew teams weren't going to pick him. Mm-hmm. It was kind of it was crazy the way that dropped. And also, weren't they going to take Sonny Gray instead of Matt Barnes if he fell? I think.
Yeah, they wanted Sonny Gray.
Yeah,
which we saw him not pitching for the Yankees in the playoffs.
Well, that's funny, right? Because like 2 years ago, you would be like, "Oh man!" Like, or 3 years ago, and now it's like, "Oh, Sonny Gray's terrible."
Yeah, Sonny Gray's not good at baseball anymore,
and Matt Barnes is now a setup man. So,
good result for. I mean. It's a weird one because, like, he was a first-round pick. What was he, 19th overall or whatever it was?
Barnes, yeah.
And it's like, damn, he's not a starter. But it's a pretty good reliever, and, he's a major leaguer, which is a win first off, and he's a contributor to a bullpen or a championship team, so you can't really complain about that pick at all.
Right. Another homegrown guy who did pitch in the postseason, although not – quite as well as Matt Barnes, is Brandon Workman. Workman was drafted in the second round in 2010. At the time of his pick, Mike Andrews and I were in Massachusetts Superior Court working on a trial. That draft is kind of crazy that he's the only one left from that draft because that one, the first rounder was Colbrun Vidic. The supplemental first round were two guys who had a little more success than Vidic and Bryce Brentz and Anthony Renato. So kind of crazy that Workman's the one who's lefty. And other names from that draft that people will remember, Sean Coyle in the third round, Garen Cecchini in the fourth round. Let's see. And then after that, it really goes downhill a little quicker. Henry Ramos in the fifth. Kendrick, the outfielder, not the center. Perkins in the sixth. Chris Hernandez in the seventh round. The guy who got up to AAA really quick and just
never did end up. No. That's a pretty bad draft.
It's not a good draft after that, honestly.
I mean, you go down like Jason Garcia was a big leaguer. Even of the guys they didn't sign, the only one really of note is Hunter Renfroe is probably the best player.
Yep. I didn't realize he was a catcher in high school.
Yeah. So that's by far, he's by far the best player actually in that draft. It's not really close.
Yeah, man. Wow.
That's a bad draft.
Yeah, I mean, there are other guys who played in the major leagues. Dylan Overton.
Yeah, for the A's.
JT Riddle. Who?
Yeah. Sure. On the Marlins, I want to say.
Okay. And then Daniel Slania.
Yeah. He went to Notre Dame and then signed with someone.
You would
I
know.
Don't know.
He went to Notre Dame.
Who did he sign with? I want to say he's on the Tigers. Nope, okay. Giants.
Orange.
He didn't pitch in the. Oh, he did pitch in the. He pitched in the big leagues last year. He got one game last year. This year he didn't.
Gotcha. Well, there you go. Yeah. So that's Workman, the only one left from that draft, and you know it'll be interesting to see what he is at this point. Does he have options remaining?
I don't think so. Right? 2010.
Yeah. No, he is now out of options. So he's a guy who is he like Heath Hembree, where he sticks on the roster all year next year just because they, you know, for flexibility they send down a pointer.
Mm-hmm. He had a pretty good regular season, but just in the playoffs, he had that awful appearance against who was the Yankees.
It seemed like he never really recovered from that.
And then, he was off the roster for the next series. So.
Right. Because they added, who did they add for the Houston series? Or was he on the roster for Houston and he came off?
He was on the roster for Houston. He came off.
Yeah,
they brought on
Pomerantz.
Pomerantz, who pitched really well in the World Series.
He did. I mean, he was a key contributor. With his zero innings pitched.
Yeah.
Next up on the homegrown list is a guy from another interesting, not good draft in Brian Johnson. Johnson was drafted in the first round in 2010. He was a compensation pick for the Red Sox losing Jonathan Papelbon to free agency, which is kind of a trip.
2012, right?
2012. Sorry, what did I say?
2010.
Okay, sorry, 2012. Not the only guy on the 40-man from that draft, actually, because joining him on the 40-man was Justin Haley, a guy who was Rule 5'd by the Twins last year or this year?
Last year.
Return to the Red Sox, spent most of the season in Pawtucket, but was kind of an up-and-down guy when they needed an arm for like a doubleheader or something. Haley, it's kind of interesting. I always forget that he signed for $125,000, so close to slot for the sixth round, even though he was a junior out of Fresno State. We were kind of surprised by how much money he got then. Johnson signed for exactly slot for the 31st pick overall. He was the Red Sox second pick that year. Their first-round pick was Devin Marrero, a guy who they traded to Arizona this year for a player to be named later, who I believe was Ramon Flores, correct? Or was that Taylor?
Who?
No, that was Josh Taylor.
Yeah, Josh Taylor.
I'm sorry. That was not Flores. They just signed, and we thought that was who they traded He was coming from Arizona. But yeah. Devin Marrero traded Pat Light. They traded Light. The other first rounder, he was picked 37th overall.
They traded him to the Pirates?
To Minnesota Fernando Abad.
Oh, God, I forgot about him. So many bad puns from him.
If that was another one. Other names in that draft, I mean, a lot of guys. Now we're kind of a little more recent, but Austin Maddox, who's still in the system and was hurt the entire year.
There's a big one in the 29th round.
In the 29th round. Okay, yeah, well, that's kind of interesting, actually. Alex Bregman.
The one that got away.
The one that got away, and notable because the article I read this year about the 2011 draft mentioned that the Red Sox scouted Bregman while they were scouting his buddy Blake Swihart. They drafted him in the 29th round. Him and they had a number of guys that they drafted out of high school that year, hoping they could sign one of them. Yeah. And they wound up signing the fourth rounder, Ty Buttrey.
Mm-hmm. Actually was part of the trade.
Yeah, and I mean, he closed games for the Angels this year, so good for him. But yeah, he was a guy that they traded to the Angels for Kinsler. So, you know, interesting. But if they hadn't signed Buttrey, the other guys that year who they might have signed, you had Carson Fulmer in the 15th round. You had Bregman in the 29th round. More interesting names from that draft. You've got Jamie Callahan in the second round, who was traded to the Mets last year in the Addison Reed deal. Mike Miller, who was in the system and just became a free agent. JT Watkins in the 10th round, who works for the team now as a I think he's an advanced scouting guy.
No, he actually was very important. He's the one who handles all their video reviews. He's in the clubhouse, you know, phoning in anytime they want to challenge. So he actually played a pretty big role in the World Series too.
That's true. Other guys who've pitched in the majors, JB Wendelken, Hunter Wood, who I don't even know. Wendelken.
Do you remember who Wendelken was traded for?
They traded him to the White Sox. Right, I'm looking at you. I'm not getting any visual cue. Oh, was he in the deal for Peavy?
Correct. Very good.
Yeah, with Brandon Jacobs.
Nope.
No.
No.
Oh, Frankie Montas and Cleo Luis Rondon.
Yep.
And then also sent Iglesias to Detroit.
Yep.
For Peavy and Brian Villarreal.
Villarreal. He threw really hard.
Yeah, that's true. And there's one more really good professional athlete in this draft, and that would be a guy who I saw on Twitter today as one of the highest ranked linebackers in the league right now or something.
He's like an all-pro.
Defense in Shaq Thompson.
What a legend.
Who, for those who don't know about Shaq Thompson did not play very much baseball in high school. Started playing it after not playing for at least 2 years, his senior year, because even though he was an excellent football prospect, was going to the University of Washington to play, I guess, defense. He wound up playing like kind of a rover.
He was playing safety in college.
Safety linebacker role.
He was a five-star recruit, like very highly regarded.
Yeah, we should probably.
Michigan was interested in him. That's the only reason I know about this.
We should update his profile because it says he had a very successful freshman football season for the Huskies as a linebacker / defensive back.
He's made like tens of millions of dollars playing in the NFL now. So yeah.
But he wanted to try baseball basically because of concussions, right? And signed with the Red Sox, went to the Gulf Coast League, and in 13 games, he had 39 at-bats. He also walked 8 times, but in 39 at-bats, he struck out 37 times.
Yeah. I will say, I saw him take BP. Boy, did he look good on the field.
Looked good in the uniform.
Yeah, when he made contact, it wasn't very often, even in batting practice, but the ball went a long way. That's about all I can say about his baseball career.
All right. Very nice. I mean, the walks, it's like he walked 8 times because he was just standing up there with the bat on his shoulder, hoping to get on base and practice base running. I mean, yeah, Shaq Thompson reference. Gotta love those. That draft. I mean, that's frankly, it wasn't a good draft, for the Red Sox. But, if you look at – it's kind of interesting. Does Ty Buttrey or Brian Johnson become the best player from that draft? Probably Buttrey would be my bet at this point.
Probably.
Marrero
Bregman
is what he
does,
is.
But yeah.
Oh, Bregman. But, I mean, with guys who they signed, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, of course it's Bregman.
I mean, but this is kind of what we talked about. We're in the barren stretch where if you take out 2011, these drafts are very bad.
They're not good.
We won't even mention the next year's draft because nobody from it contributed to the
team. There was no one on the 40?
No, not a single person.
Wow, there wasn't. Yeah, the 2013 draft, the only Red Sox left. The only players still in the system are Trey Ball, who's converting to the outfield. Teddy Stankiewicz, who we talked about earlier. Jake Romanski, who missed a significant amount of time this year because of a drug suspension. Yosef Monhe, who missed the entire year with a shoulder injury, and Jansen Witte, who bounced up and down between AA and AAA. Major leaguers from the 2013 draft are Kyle Martin, who pitched in Korea this year, I think, and Carlos Asuaje, who we'll talk about in a little bit.
That's it.
I guess Asuaje is the one who contributed most to this team.
That's what I was saying. Carlos Asuaje is probably the
best.
Well,
no.
Dubon, I guess.
Oh, was Dubon that draft?
Yeah.
I guess Dubon. Well, Dubon didn't contribute much to this.
No,
team.
But he also tore his shoulder this year. Genuinely, you could make the case that Carlos Asuaje is going to be the best big leaguer from that draft, which is a wild thought.
Yeah, that's true. Miles Smith was traded for Zeke Spreel.
Yeah.
Who did they trade him? No, he went and signed with Korea. Okay, yeah. That's God, that's a crazy draft. We get guys getting released for punching guys. We've got, man, guys getting released because they don't like baseball.
Yeah, it's a wild draft.
Guys getting released because they may have been never mind.
Yeah, it's an interesting draft.
That's a fun one. Maybe that's a thing we could do this offseason is go back draft by draft and do oral histories.
I'd love to do that.
That would be great.
There's a scout in the Red Sox or a scout for the Red Sox now in there. Reed Gragnani.
Oh, no, he's not a scout. He's a coach.
Is he a coach? Okay. I thought he was a scout for a little bit.
No. Are you thinking of...
I'm pretty sure he was their area scout in the Mid-Atlantic for a little bit.
I don't believe that's true. I think he retired and became like one of those assistant like player coach type guys who like they're like the fourth coach that like not every minor league team has anyway. But yeah, so that's that.
No, he's a scout. He's a scout now.
He's a scout now. Okay. Yeah. So he moved cause he was a coach.
He was, he became a scout before this year.
Okay. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. He's fair like enough. Their Mid-Atlantic area guy.
Got it. Next longest tenured major leaguer is a guy who they acquired in the 2015 draft, 7th overall, and that would be Andrew Benintendi. Obviously, don't have to tell you much about his rise because it's so recent. Draft-eligible sophomore. Probably, like, again, that's something that I could... Is that ever going to happen again? That a guy goes from that off the radar to the number 7th pick overall, in part because no one knew he was a draft-eligible sophomore.
Yeah, that's bad.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
If you redraft the 2015 draft, now I'm really curious, 2015 MLB draft first round.
There's a few really good guys at the top, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So,
it's like Correa, isn't it? Or no, Brady.
So, no, Dansby Swanson goes number one. Bregman goes number two. Brendan Rodgers goes number three. I mean, Benintendi at this point probably goes, at the first round, he goes number two.
Two or three. It's him or Walker Buehler. Bregman's one.
Oh, Buehler, right.
Bregman's one, and then it's either Buehler or Benintendi at two.
Garrett Willem. I always get Garrett Whitley confused with Forrest Whitaker. Is it Forrest Whitley? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, that's it. It's those three are the best. I mean, of the first round, I'm looking at the next round. Scott Kingery's in the second round, but he's not as good as them.
I mean, there are guys who could still be very, very good. I mean, this is a strong draft.
Yeah, but if you redrafted it now, he's a top three pick for sure.
Yeah. Let's see. Bader at pick 100, that's not bad.
Yeah, the only all-star of the top – what is this? The only all-star in the top – like five rounds or something is him.
Coda Glover.
Yeah. Actually, the only all-star from this entire draft is Alex Bregman, unless Benintendi made it this year, which I think he did.
No, I don't think he did.
Did he? You know? I thought he was in the final vote.
Yeah, but he didn't get picked.
Oh, yeah, he was a candidate. He didn't get picked. So the only all-star is Bregman. But right. Yeah, it's those three.
Right.
I mean, Benintendi, that's a great pick. That was, you know, them being really lucky having an early pick. Because he was going with the next pick to the Cubs, who took, I think, Ian Happ with the next pick.
They took
Carson. It was the ninth pick.
Yeah, because Carson Fulmer went to the White Sox at 8, and Fulmer was a guy who we heard that they might take as well.
Well, they drafted him out of high school, so.
Right. If they whiffed on two straight number seven, not two straight, but the number seven overall pick in both 2013 and 2015.
Yeah, because that was like, I remember when they had that pick, it was like, well, we don't get the chance to pick up here very often, which is true. You know, you have to nail it, and they did, Benintendi.
Yeah. Looking at, that's a good draft, man. I mean, Kyle Tucker is a guy. Ian Happ, I mean, is a guy.
And it's good for the MLB. Colby the Red Sox Allard. Draft wasn't great.
Trent Clark, who's now Trent Grisham, was in a... James Caprillion's okay. Brady Aiken, no, I guess he hasn't really done anything.
Kingery's in the second round. Mike Soroka.
Bo Burrow's in the first round is still a pretty decent prospect. Taylor Ward debuted this year.
Cabrian Hayes is really highly regarded for Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
Christian Stewart is. Mountcastle. It's a good draft.
Yeah.
Tristan McKenzie, Austin Riley. Kingery, as we said.
Daz Cameron had a bounce back year. Did you already say him?
Yeah, Jahmy Jones had a good year. I mean, AJ Minter is MLB pitcher. Yeah, it's a good draft. Blake Trahan, not Blake Trinan. Harrison Bader's good for the Cardinals. Same with Jordan Hicks, who both went ahead of Tate Matheny in the fourth round. Paul DeJong actually was in that draft. He's good.
That's true. Yeah, we missed him. Willie Calhoun in the fourth round.
Yeah, that fourth round's good.
Mariano Rivera the third.
Yeah. The Red Sox version of that draft is not great.
Not as good. Travis Lakins, Ben Taylor,
which is
a they drafted Benintendi. Players who are still in the system, Benintendi, Travis Lakins is a top 20 prospect, Bobby Pointer, as you mentioned, as well as some interesting guys who just haven't, you know, either due to injuries or otherwise haven't really been able to take off very well. I guess they signed their first 17 picks and 24 of their first 25. So after that, they didn't really sign many guys. But yeah, that draft is
that was a draft where they basically gave all their money to Benintendi and Logan Allen. And Logan Allen obviously is really highly regarded now. He's a top 100 prospect, but he was part of, he got Dombrowski'd. So he was traded.
And of course,
for someone we'll talk about later,
position player pitching specialist Tucker Tubbs was that year as well.
That is true.
80 grade speed, 20 grade bat. Nick Hamilton was that year.
Ah, I loved watching Nick Hamilton play.
Yeah. Anyway, 2015 draft. So that's Benintendi. Yeah, Andrew Benintendi. The next homegrown guy I really like, he's kind of interesting, is Robbie Scott, who in 2011 signed out of Indy Ball. So he's the only Indy Ball guy, or one of two, I guess, Indy Ball guys. Rendick was signed out of Indy Ball after being in, you know, a major leaguer. Not quite the same as signing Robbie Scott out of Indy Ball, pitching for, who is he pitching for? Yuma, I want to say. Yeah, Yuma of the North American Baseball League, where his manager was Jose Canseco. And he learned his contract had been purchased by the Red Sox while he was pitching. Because he was in a game, Canseco came out to take him out, and he was like, what the heck? And Canseco was like, yeah, the Red Sox just, you know, purchased your contract and they don't want you pitching and getting hurt. And he's like, I sprinted off the field. But yeah, pitched at a JUCO for 2 years, pitched at Florida State for 2 years. He pitched 14 and a third innings in 2 years at Florida State. Red Sox liked what they saw in Yuma, apparently, and signed him. And he spent, let's see, from 2011 until 2016, kicking around, finally got the call up in 2016. Yeah, Robbie Scott, a guy who, really interesting, just really, you don't see guys make that trip up to the majors very often, Ian, but, you know, kind of another nice scouting find for them in that he's pitched quality innings for them as a lefty reliever. Not sure what the role is for him going forward, but.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, he had a pretty bad year this year. And obviously he didn't make the playoff roster at all. So I'm not really sure where his future lies, but I mean, it was, as you said, he was a valuable contributor. He was important last year, pitched pretty well. And, you know, I think they signed him for like a buck or something. So that works out well.
Yeah, certainly not a bad investment for a buck. Indeed, it's like we're going to have to do like the sequel to Not a Bad Investment for $10,000, which was the name of one of the episodes a couple weeks ago. So Robbie Scott. Another kind of interesting scouting find would be Hector Velasquez, the next guy, who Velasquez, they signed out of Mexico last year. It's almost kind of hard to think of him as a minor league free agent, given how old he was when they signed him and how many years he had pitched in Mexico, Ian. Hector Velasquez, let's see where he is on here, which, by the way, he's the 23rd most tenured guy on the 40-man roster right now. But when they signed him, he made his debut in the major leagues at age 28. And he'd pitched for a long time in the Mexican summer and winter leagues. A lot of miles on the arm, but it works for the role they've got him in. Again, scouting to go find that guy, who apparently the Yankees were in a bidding war to get him as well, but the Red Sox got to him first. And so that's why he asked his club, look, the Red Sox wanted me first. I want to go with the Red Sox, even though the Yankees were going to offer his team more money. So
respect. I just did the Derek Jeter kid thing.
I thought you were doing like an Ali G big no. respect mon. Not that you don't even
know you know Ali you G know is. Derek. I know who Ali G is. You know Derek Jeter's his like nephew or whatever at his last game when the kid tipped the cap.
Yeah. Oh, is that his nephew? I didn't even know yeah. that. Interesting.
The meme you see everywhere. Yeah.
And then we'll probably just roll through the rest of these guys pretty quickly. Sam Travis. We talked about Austin Maddox. Sam Travis drafted in the second round in 2014. That 2014 draft still has guys percolating down in the minors. Chavis is that draft. Michael Kopech is that draft, who we'll talk about in a bit. Jake Cozart, Kevin McAvoy, Josh Ockamy, Danny Mars, Cole Sturgeon, Chandler Shepard, Trent Kemp, Jeremy Rivera, Jordan Betts, Tyler Hill, Devin Fisher, all still in the system. Jalen Beeks, another major leaguer, who we'll talk about in a little bit in that draft. So the major leaguers in that draft are Kopech, Travis, and Beeks so far. But, you know, certainly there'll at least be one more in Michael Chavis. I think J.J. Matuszewski is a guy who wound up having a really good career at Arizona and is a pretty good prospect, Ian, if that's
right. Yeah, he's with the Astros. They drafted in like the third round.
Also, 28th round pick David Peterson went to Oregon, and I want to say he went to Oregon State.
He was a first round pick by the Mets. First round pick Jaron Kendall was a first round pick by the Dodgers last year. Anyone else? I think that's it.
Yeah, Josh Pennington was a guy who they traded. They traded him in the Thornburg deal, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
I think that's it.
That's it. So, yeah, that's 2014 draft where Sam Travis comes from. Zue Lin and Rafael Devers are the next two guys. The only two, I guess, the only two true July 2 guys on this list.
And Lin's not even really, I mean, I guess.
Well, he's not a J2 guy, actually. He's a legit international signee.
But he was the year after.
Well,
he was like signed at the end of the cycle right before
the new rules kicked in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Zue Lin was signed for, let's see here. Where the hell is he? Lin. Oh yeah, here we go.
$2,050,000
out of Taiwan in June of 2012, right before the new signing caps were implemented. Basically because of the fact that the new signing caps are going to be implemented. So it was kind of a really interesting situation. The Red Sox outbid. I think they outbid some teams, but I think he also picked the Red Sox because they'd been on him for a while. I think the Yankees were in on him too, if I remember right. Actually, if only there were a place where one could see such things.
Let me Google that for you.
It's on his profile on SoxProspects.com.
Tell me more about that website. It sounds very interesting.
Yeah. So he received the largest bonus ever for an amateur position player from Taiwan, in part due to the timing that we just discussed. He had reportedly agreed to sign with the Yankees in 2010, but the Chinese Taipei Baseball Association threatened to ban him from playing or coaching in Taiwan if he signed before finishing high school. He's the fourth Taiwanese player to record a major league hit. So that's also kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, Lin is a guy that I would like to see them give some run as a utility guy on the bench. But I guess as long as he's got options and Brock Holt's around and Eduardo Nunez is around, he's going to be up and down again next year.
I like him, though. Yeah, he's repetitive with what they have. But, yeah, I think he's going to have a good big league career.
I think he'll have one more year riding the 95 shuttle. And then I think after next year, when both Holt and Nunez are free agents, he comes up and takes one of those spots.
I would agree.
Rafael Devers, we've talked a lot about on here, signed for $1.5 million on July 2nd, 2013, a class that also includes Emmanuel De Jesus, Jonathan Diaz, Yoan Ibar, probably much more notably, Darwinson Hernandez, who didn't sign until August, and he only signed for $7,500. Dalia Hinojosa. Was another big money signing that international signing period. But yeah, the big ticket ones were Devers at $1.5 million. And then after that, you had De Jesus at $787K, Jonathan Diaz at $600K, Ibar for $450K. So Devers is, Ian, this season wasn't necessarily all ups. There were ups and downs. I'm not worried about him. Are you? I think he's still the third baseman in the future.
He's going to have a year where he's going to hit 280. to three. He's going to hit 280, could even hit 300, frankly, and like 35 home runs. It's only a matter of time. And I like that. Saw on Twitter that he's working out. He's going to spend a lot of the offseason working with JD Martinez in Miami, which can never be a bad thing given how good JD Martinez is. I was just going to say, like, he's still 21. You know, he's had two really good playoffs in a row where, you know, he shows the stage isn't a matter. It's just, you know, he just needs some fine tuning still. He was a little raw when they called him up. I think they knew that. You know, if you look at it, it's crazy to think he had 77 games in Double A and 9 games in Triple A when he got called up. It wasn't like, you know, he was a tenured minor leaguer. Like, he had spent half a season in above A ball. So he's still got some development to do, and he still does, even though he's in the majors. And, you know, I'm interested to see what happens next year, where I think he's going to be a pretty key piece of the team.
Yeah, I could see him hitting 300 absolutely for a couple of years. He's got that kind of a bat. I made the mistake of reading the comments to that other replies to that tweet about him going to spend the offseason with Martinez to work on hitting. And the first reply was like, doing zero fielding drills.
My God.
I'm just like, oh my God.
That throw in the World Series was absurd. He had that.
Yes. I remember the one. Yes. It's a plus arm, man.
Yeah. That was like a borderline 70 throw. Like, he's fine. Yeah.
He'll get there. Last three guys we'll just roll through really quick. Chandler Shepherd, Bobby Pointer, and we actually already talked about Haley. Did we talk about Pointer? I guess we already mentioned Pointer in the year he got drafted. Chandler Shepherd was drafted in the 2014 draft in the 13th round, too. So we talked about the 2014 draft. So that's where those guys all come from. Little bit more fun, to me, I think, is the trades.
There's some good ones in here.
There's some really good ones in here. We're not going to necessarily go with the in-depth treatment that we gave these guys because we're kind of famous last words. Let's do a short one. Steven Wright, the second longest tenured player on the 40-man roster, was acquired for noted writer for The Athletic, Lars Anderson. What a trip that – I mean, he went into the playoffs and he was going to be like their – second most important relief pitcher. Who knows? Can you expect anything out of Steven Wright going forward? Probably not, right? Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but... Steven Wright, you know, hey, he gave them some valuable innings this year when he came back. He gave them some valuable innings last year before he got hurt. Cheeto the Cat can't decide whether he wants to stay in my office or not, so I have to keep leaning over and opening the door. But yeah, Lars Anderson just... You know, former top prospect in the system, drafted in the 18th round in the 2006 draft, Ian, which I did not even realize it was going to be that long ago.
It was a while ago.
That is, again, the word of the night is wild. And a draft that obviously no one left in the system for that one. I don't think there's even anyone left in the majors from that one. Scanning quickly. I mean, you have guys like Daniel Bard, Chris Johnson, Justin Masterson, Aaron Bates, Dustin Richardson, Chris Negron. Chris Negron is the only guy left playing. Oh, Josh Reddick. Sorry. That's the obvious one. Josh Reddick. And Brandon Belt didn't sign, so that doesn't quite count. But yeah, Reddick and everyone else.
Dustin Richardson still's hilarious because I don't know if you ever watched his show. He was on that show Night School on ESPN.
I didn't watch it, but
where Bobby Knight like tried out guys to
for Texas Tech basketball
Texas
team.
Tech. Yeah, and Dustin Richardson was on that show. That did just it. A random thing. I think did he win it? I think you're right.
Oh no! I think he was going to win it,
but then he told he was also on the baseball team, and they were like, "No, you can't also play basketball."
Right. So he would have won it, but then he
But anyway, that just came to my head when you mentioned Dustin Richardson, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a weird draft. Also, Josh Papelbon was in that draft. Jonathan Papelbon's little brother, who I remember that was one of our first big scoops was when we broke his getting cut from spring training because we happened to be down there when he got cut. And, like, people cared because it was Jonathan Papelbon's little brother getting cut.
Yeah, he wasn't very good.
He was a submariner. They took a chance on him.
Exactly. The next trade might be my favorite one on here.
Yeah, so the Brock Holt acquired from the Pittsburgh Pirates in December of 2012 with Joel Hanrahan for Mark Melancon, Stolmy Pimentel, Jerry Sands, and Ivan De Jesus, who, of course, had come back to the system this year as a free agent. Sands and De Jesus were kind of like the spare parts acquired from the Dodgers in the Nick Punto trade. Stomy Pimentel was a homegrown guy who the Red Sox had signed for, I think, $25,000 out of the Dominican Republic, and had worked his way up into being a pretty good prospect at the time they traded him.
He got a cup of coffee a few times.
He got a couple cups of coffees in the coffee in the majors. He pitched, let's see, debuted in 2013, pitching in five games. Never started in the majors, only made relief appearances. Never had more than 11 innings pitched in a major league season. Oh, no, 32 innings pitched for the Pirates in 20 appearances in 2014. Stolme. I just remember because it's like Stolme was such a weird name. And then, of course, Mark Melancon. The trade was basically Melancon and spare parts for Hanrahan and a spare part. And, I mean, well, Melanson's been more valuable than Brock Holt, but Holt is clearly the second best player in that deal.
Well, Melancon, though, was acquired for Jed Lowry, who had an unbelievable season with Houston and Kyle Weiland also. Oh, but Lowry is the interesting one. But, yeah, I mean, Brock Holt, he had a really good playoffs. He's a very valuable player.
Jed Lowry and Kyle Weiland. I forgot about that. Dang.
And, you know, it's impressive that I forget it was that long ago. He was acquired in 2012, and he's developed into a really useful major league player. I know I was very down on him at the beginning of this year when he was struggling, but he really had turned it around, had a really good year. So,
I mean, this is who he is. He's not a major league starter. He's a major league bench guy who's great in the clubhouse, who, you know,
has an adorable little kid.
Yes. Oh my God, the glasses.
Yeah.
Next up is Heath Hembree, who was acquired from the San Francisco Giants with Edwin Escobar for Jake Peavy in cash.
Oh God, Edwin Escobar.
And we just mentioned who was traded for Jake Peavy earlier in the show. So basically, Jose Iglesias, who else was a JB Wendelken, and who was the Clay
Montas.
Luis Rondon.
Montas.
And Frankie Montas, yeah. Montas, who got some time in the majors this year.
There's a lot going on with that trade, too. And Hembree, I mean, he's a serviceable major league reliever. Yeah, he is what he is.
Yeah, I mean, he'll probably be fighting. I mean, he's going to fight for a roster spot every year he's in the majors. And he'll find one somewhere, whether or not it's with the team that he started spring training with, probably for a while. Next up is Joe Kelly. Acquired in a trade that
it's a wild trade too.
For years was bemoaned by Red Sox fans. See, this is why 2013 seems so long ago, because this trade was in 2014 and Kelly was acquired with Alan Craig.
Oh my God. One of the
for John Lackey, Corey Littrell, and cash considerations. Wow.
Alan Craig had one of the slowest bats I've ever seen in minor league baseball. Until he was cut last year. Mm-hmm. Like, it was unbelievable. He hit 173 in 2016.
Yeah, he was not good. The one we should probably talk up a little bit really quick is Corey Littrell. Littrell was drafted in the fifth round out of the University of Kentucky in 2013. He went on – I don't know that he pitched this year.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Did he have TJ or something, I wonder? Because I don't think he was a minor league free agent or anything. But at any rate,
he was suspended.
He was suspended?
Positive drug test.
Oh, that's no good. Well, Littrell, I mean, he actually was pretty good with the Cardinals. Made it to Triple A in 2016, but then pitched in 2017 in Double A. So he was kind of heading in the wrong direction. Had moved to the bullpen in 2016 as a kind of a, you know, hopefully get a job as a lefty specialist. And was really good in that role in 2016, I think that was the year he had Tommy John because he only pitched 15 and two-thirds innings. So, yeah, Corey Littrell, an interesting name to hear in these trades. Of course, next up, Eduardo Rodriguez, acquired from the Baltimore Orioles for Andrew Miller. In July of 2014. So kind of a half homegrown guy, maybe you could call him.
Because he went straight to like Double A, I want to say, to Portland.
Yeah. Yeah. Miller, of course, was a guy who was acquired from the Florida Marlins. For whom, Ian? Can you guess?
Andrew Miller, Josh Beckett.
Dustin Richardson.
Dustin Richardson. Oh, wow.
So it all comes full circle.
Oh, my God. What a small world.
It all comes full circle. He also went to Buchholz High School in Florida.
Oh, no. Why did I think – I knew he was part of a big trade. He was part of the Miguel Cabrera trade. That's what it was.
Yeah. From the Tigers.
Yeah, I don't know why I said Beckett. Yeah.
Yep. So
– and – yeah, and I mean Rodriguez, he had a couple, you know, good innings. He had that really good start actually in game four. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that inning where he got left in an inning too long. But yes. I still think he's going to be a good pitcher for the Red Sox. I think he's going to be like a solid number four starter for a while.
Who'll have periods where he pitches like a number two.
Exactly. You know, he'll have stretches, but he's not consistent enough.
Right. Next up is the guy that I called earlier in the podcast, a free agent guy, but Rick Porcello was acquired from the Detroit Tigers in December of 2014 for Yoenis Cespedes, who I always forget played for the Red Sox, Alex Wilson, who Mike Andrews is convinced that the Red Sox are going to trade for this offseason, and Gabe Spear, who's been traded like three more times. Alex Wilson is basically a setup reliever now, was a setup reliever for the Tigers this year. You guys know about Yoenis Cespedes, not going to talk about him. Gabe Spear had a Tommy John surgery. He went from Detroit to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and this past season he got traded to the Kansas City Royals midseason. So, yeah, he has been moved around. It's kind of one of those weird things where he's one of those guys that teams want, but they don't necessarily like enough to keep, I guess. I don't know. But not bad for a guy who was signed for $200K, drafted in the 19th round in 2013. So nice gift for the Red Sox to be able to include him in a trade for a guy who was a key contributor on a World Series team in Rick Porcello.
I mean, this is his last year, I think?
Yeah. This is his last season with
the club. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him. But I mean, he didn't have his, you know, obviously it wasn't as good as some of, what is it? His Cy Young year. I forget that he won the Cy Young. What a ridiculous thing.
Last year.
No,
2 years ago.
But I mean, he had a good regular season, obviously gave up too many home runs, but he's a good pitcher. I mean, he's a solid like number three pitcher, number two, he's a number three. He's a number three.
Can you see the cats fighting each other in the background right now?
Yeah, it's kind of awesome. Some National Geographic stuff going on right now.
It is National Geographic stuff happening behind me right now. I apologize.
High ground always wins. That's all I'm going to say.
That's why Firefly gets the high ground.
Well, this is a little right jab right there.
Oh, okay. All right. Hold on. All right. So moving on. Now we get into the Dave Dombrowski era. With Craig Kimbrell, which was the first, oh crap, he really is going to trade all of the prospects trade.
He didn't trade all of them, just most of them.
Obviously, he was acquired in November 2015 in exchange for Manuel Margot, Javier Guerra, Logan Allen, and Carlos Asuaje. We just mentioned Asuaje. Margot was an international free agent, signed in 2011 on July 2nd for $800K. Not a great year. This year for the Padres, hit 245, 292, 384. Good defense, but pretty light with the stick.
He had really real regression at the plate from last year where he was really good.
Well, I wouldn't even say really good.
He was good. Interesting, yeah.
Last year he was 263, 313, 409. This year, a lot worse. 11 steals and 21 attempts.
He was never always the fastest guy either. Yeah. He used to have good instincts. That's how he defensively, he's like an instincts guy because he's a really good defender. Mm-hmm. But steals were never really his forte.
Javi Guerra made his major league debut this year, but didn't hit very well, and he didn't hit great in AAA El Paso.
He's had major health issues.
Has he?
That's what I read somewhere. Like just injuries and stuff have always been a problem.
Yeah, interesting. He did play 135 games this year, so.
Yeah, true.
But last year in 2017, he played at 128 games, which I guess is a little fewer.
Yeah, I will say he's someone who they did a good job selling high on.
Yep. Yeah, that's the Dave Dombrowski special right there.
Because there were major swing and miss questions with him. And Yeah.
Logan Allen is a top 100 prospect, or at least a borderline top 100 prospect at this point.
He's good.
This past year, he got up to AAA. in 20 appearances, 19 of them starts in Double A for San Antonio. He, in 121 innings, struck out 125 guys, 105 whip, 275 ERA, went up to Triple A El Paso and made five starts, 26 Ks, 13 walks in 27 and two-thirds innings, 163 ERA, 123 whip. He's going to make his Major League debut next year as long as everything goes according to plan. Yeah, Logan Allen, again, I think he's going to be – if he's a good major leaguer, Ian, I think he's a guy that people are going to bemoan in terms of Dombrowski for a long time. It's going to, he's going to be the – on a lesser scale, the was it worth it to trade Hanley Ramirez for Josh Beckett? You know, or were you trading multiple World Series for one, which I don't buy. I'm just saying that's a thing that people say.
It's just he was the one I remember, and at the time we talked about it, that like Margot, Guerra, and Allen or Enesuahe should have been enough. And like Allen, obviously, I think it was only his second. He got traded during the offseason after his first year. He obviously was really good with the Red Sox with the GC Allen Bowl. And then, you know, they kind of just traded him. It seemed like a throw in at the time. But now, I mean, I wouldn't rule out him be turning into the best player from that trade for San Diego, which is interesting.
All right, going into speed mode here because we're.
Well, and do you think they re-sign Kimbrel?
No.
I wouldn't either.
No, I don't think they do. I think someone else gives him his money.
Which is, I mean, it's interesting. I was hoping they would get a higher pick, but it looks like they only get a fourth round pick if someone signs him because they were over the tax last year.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, it pushes it down. There's punishments are you only get a fourth round pick. And if they sign anyone who got offered the QO, they give up a second and a fifth round pick and $1 million of their international budget.
Right.
So
I
don't see them doing that.
Right. No, no, probably not. Really quick. Marco Hernandez didn't play at all, but he was the player to be named later for Felix DuBrant. People know who Felix DuBrant is. Mm-hmm. Carson Smith acquired with Rowenis Elias for Wade Miley and Jonathan Aroh.
We hardly knew ye.
Hardly knew ye. Wade Miley was the number two starter for the Brewers in the postseason.
Wild one. Yeah.
Baseball's
weird.
Yeah, it's really weird. Drew Pomerantz acquired from San Diego for Anderson Espinoza, who still hasn't pitched after his various arm troubles, Tommy John, etc.
I don't think we see Drew Pomerantz
again. I don't either.
At the time,
I could see them bringing him back on a cheap pillow contract.
Maybe. I just, at the time, I didn't really like the trade, and I still don't, frankly, even with Espinoza getting hurt.
Yep. Next up is Tyler Thornburg. I don't want to get into this trade. We've talked about it ad nauseum.
They got slaughtered. It's fine.
They got slaughtered, even just for Travis Shaw. Stop it there, and it's one-sided. Yeah. Throw in the fact that the Red Sox also traded Mauricio Dubon, Josh Pennington, and as a player to be named later, Yeason Coca. Granted, Dubon had ACL tear this year. I think you said shoulder. Was the ACL tear last year?
No, it was ACL. He was ACL. Yeah, sorry.
Josh Pennington retired. He was going to need a third Tommy John, I think.
Yeah, he blew out his arm again.
Yeah, and then, so he was just
I don't know how Coca did.
I don't believe very well, no.
All right. Well, yeah, but still, I mean, Travis Shaw's an all-star, so that's not a good trade.
One player that they don't regret making is Chris Sale in exchange for Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, Luis Alexander Basabe, and Victor Diaz. Moncada was not great with the Bright White Sox this year, Ian. In 149 games, so they gave him some run, man, at second base. He struck out 217 times, 235, 315, 400, 12 steals in 18 attempts, 17 home runs, I guess. So he did hit for power, but...
I'm not sure he can hit.
Yeah, I mean...
That trade looks really good for the Red Sox now. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunate. It didn't, you know, for a bit because Moncada was obviously – I mean, it did actually because Sale's a stud. But Moncada was like a top five prospect in baseball and Kopech turned into a top – like the top pitching prospect in baseball. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, then Kopech obviously is having Tommy John. Basabe, who knows? I mean, I think he's up to Double A and he's in the fall league and he's pitching – he had a pretty good year.
He played in the Futures game.
He had a bomb in the Futures game.
Off of Hunter Green, yeah.
I think Victor Diaz blew out his arm also. So, yeah. I mean, it was a trade they had to make. They got an ace. It's one of the few like situations where I'm okay giving up those high end guys is when you're getting an elite guy back. And they did. So, and Chris Sale's a stud. I mean, obviously they had some health issues this year, which is going to be interesting to see what happens going forward or anything more comes out with that. But, yeah, I mean, Sale's a good player. So,
Eduardo Nunez was acquired from the Giants in July 2017 for Sean Anderson and Gregory Santos. Anderson also pitched in the Futures game this year, made it up to AAA with the Giants. He's still pitching as a starter. In AAA, he struck out 32, walked 11, allowed 48 hits and 47 and a third. I don't know why he made the Futures game. His numbers really aren't that great. He did strike out 93 and 94 innings in Double A Richmond.
Because the Giants needed a representative, maybe.
I guess I don't know. Yeah, I mean he's okay. He's good. He's not a top 100 level prospect at all. I don't think they regret giving him up for one second, even just for that 18 inning game. What Nunez did throwing himself around the diamond.
Yeah.
And then Gregory Santos pitched.
He's pretty highly regarded.
Yeah, pitched this past season in the Northwest League, which I think is advanced rookie ball, right? Or is that – no, that's
it's like
short season.
League, but it's
short
the season. League in the Northwest.
Okay. Yeah. 49 and two-thirds innings. He allowed 64 hits and 15 walks. He did strike out 46 guys. The numbers aren't great, but he's, you know, he's 18 pitching in
he throws
short
really
season
hard.
A. And he throws really hard, yeah. So – $275,000 signing bonus for Gregory Santos. So good find by the Red Sox there, finding a guy who helped him get a major leaguer.
Mm-hmm.
Next trade is Steve.
We're getting to the big ones.
Yeah, the kind of the three that were made in season this year. Steve Pierce acquired from the Toronto Blue Jays with cash considerations for Santiago Espinal. Ian, it drove me nuts the day of game three. When people were talking about the Steve Pierce trade, like the Blue Jays just gave him away.
Yeah, I mean, that was dumb. Santiago Espinal is a good player. I mean, I saw him this year with New Hampshire, and I think he's going to be like a useful major leaguer in like a utility infielder role.
I saw him in Salem, and I thought the same thing.
Yeah, like Steve Pierce was useless to them. They weren't going to make the playoffs. Like he's a 34, 35-year-old corner guy who like they had no use for him, and they got a useful major leaguer who's probably like a – he's probably in the 10 to 20 range in their system.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a fair trade for both parties because there wasn't obviously a huge market for Pierce and he played a huge role for the Red Sox, obviously. So,
right.
Yeah.
Nate Eovaldi, we talked about that, traded for Jalen Beeks. We've been saying this ad nauseum, great player development, find and develop. Oh, sorry. Great amateur scouting, find player development, development story in Jalen Beeks.
Well, Espinal was too, we should mention. He signed for $50K as a 10th round pick in 2016. So he was an underslot community college guy. That's a heck of a return. Like turning him into a useful player was pretty impressive.
Yep. And then we talked about Eovaldi for Beeks. And then, of course, the last one was Ty Buttrey and Williams Harris for Ian Kinsler. Buttrey closed games for the Angels, and Harris did get up to the majors this year as well for the Angels.
He struggled, though. He struck out a bunch of guys, but that was it.
Yeah. Kinsler, Gold Glover.
Yeah.
We should mention Jackie Bradley, Gold Glover, and
Marcus Lynn Betts, Gold Glover.
Marcus Lynn Betts, Gold Glover. Yep. So, yeah.
And then just to wrap it up, it's what the three big free agent guys were the last guys, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's an interesting story looking back at how they put this roster.
I would have never guessed that, though. Like, I bet if you walked up to people on the street, they would have said, like, you know, 15 of the guys are free agents. But it just shows that free agency is not the end all be all. And it's actually, frankly, not a way to build your team. Like you have to, you know, either through via trades of homegrown guys or signing or, you know, drafting and then developing those guys. That's where the backbone and the majority of your team comes from. It's the free agency is for filling those gaps that you can't, you know, that you don't develop.
Yep.
And the Red Sox have done a really good job with that. And, you know, you got to give Dave Dombrowski credit. He's, you know, kept the right guys. He's traded, it seems, the right guys. For the most part, and he built a championship team that dominated the league this year. So kudos to them.
And they're a team that does have the benefit, though, Ian, and we heard this back when Theo Epstein was in charge, too, that they've got the money that they can survive mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
Like they can survive Drew Pomerantz giving them nothing.
They can survive Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez this year.
Exactly. They paid those guys
$50 million
to go away. $50 million between them to go away. you know, a lesser team can't survive that.
Well, so, I mean, a lesser team can't pay the luxury tax like they are. I mean, they're forfeiting what they're, or they're moving back like 15 spots or 10 picks.
Yep.
Because they went over
overall
$240 million this year. So,
yeah. So don't expect too much in this year's draft, folks. But luckily, they did really well in the 2018 draft.
But it's just interesting that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what they do this year, because I think Hanley's off the cap, but Pablo's got one more year, I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't have a lot of room to do stuff. Like, and they also don't have a lot of roster spots where they need things, I guess. Right. But
I mean, it's rejigger the bullpen. And we'll talk a bit about this in the next episode of the podcast, I think. But it's probably one starter and multiple bullpen spots.
But this is also, probably it could be potentially the last year of this kind of group. So we'll see what happens.
It's going to be interesting.
I
know this is getting ahead of ourselves, but Mike presently has Matt Barnes as the closer entering next year. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's potentially he identified Brazier and Barnes as the two options. So I thought if they re-signed Joe Kelly, I might give him a shot. That stuff he was showing in the playoffs.
That's true. That was,
and he's such a weirdo that I feel like he could be successful in the closer role, because closers are just strange.
Yep. That's true. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. So I think, it's going to be an interesting off season, and it's going to give us a lot to talk about, I think.
It is. All right. Well, for Ian, I'm Chris. Thank you everybody for the download and for listening to our nonsense as usual. Shout out to our podcast editor, Joe Tetrault, aka Podcast Joe 2.0. You can follow me at SP Chris Hatfield. Follow him at Ian Cundall. That's IANCUNDALL. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back at you soon.